Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. This is where top performers share their secrets to help you achieve your personal and your professional goals. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and together with my incredible guests, we bring you inspiring and actionable insights to take your life and your business to the next level. Ranked in the top 2% globally, this podcast really is a must listen. And again, it's because of my guests. So sit back, relax, take notes, and prepare to explore the wisdom of my guests. So Candace is here, Candace Porter, and I'm so excited. I'm not going to give you a whole lot of information about her because I'm going to let her do it. She'll do it much better. Good morning, Candace, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. Oh, and thank you for sending your book to me. It's in front of me as we speak, and I've got questions. So thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Denise. I've really been looking forward to this.
I have as well. The book is terrific. You co-wrote it with another podcast guest of mine, Damon Limby, who is a fantastic, we had two conversations and my head was just buzzing. And after reading your book that you wrote with him, I'm like, oh, got to bring her. She's got to come on too. So here we are.
Thank you. And I have to say, Damon is such a fantastic co-author and a friend. And I have learned so much from him over the years. I mean, his business is 25 plus years in San Francisco, and he is just one of the most genuine people that I've ever met.
He really is. So tell our audience about you, because I didn't mean to skip that, but I wanted really for you to tell your tale in your own words.
Sure. I feel like I'm a cat that has had many lives. I was born and raised in Missouri in a very small town, northern Missouri. It's called Macon. And I spent, the first 17 years of my life there. And I went off to college in Kansas City and spent a couple of years there and then decided I wanted to do something different. And I joined the United States Air Force. I went active duty at a young age and spent, close to 8 years active duty in the Air Force. I traveled United States a lot. I lived overseas in Turkey for a few years. I worked at the Pentagon, loved every second of it, and eventually made the decision to transition out in Washington, D.C. I discovered the consulting world, and the rest is history. That's what I've been doing for many years now. Absolutely love working with leaders, working with teams on project management, change management, and leadership development. And now I'm located here in beautiful Reno, Nevada. I've got mountains right outside my window covered in snow. And I have to say, I have learned so much through my journey over the past couple of decades, and I'm still learning. I think that that's absolutely key to keep an open mind and realize that the only guarantee in life is that things will change and you have to be willing to adapt.
Oh, no kidding. And you are the founder and CEO of Effective Flow Connections, which is a management consulting company. And yes, you've got credentials. I don't even want to try to read them out. That's your job. You're going to have to do it.
Well, I have to tell you, while I was active duty, and I started out enlisted in the Air Force, I started out as a weather forecaster. That's why I feel like that is an entire lifetime ago. But I loved it because I learned a lot during that time. Decision-making skills were instilled in that role. And you had to build your confidence and make decisions with the best information that you had at hand. And you also had to be willing to be wrong, because weather forecasting is hard. It's very scientific. And I learned a lot through that experience. I eventually became an officer and became a services officer is actually the name of it, where I was leading a lot of large programs and projects. Services really focuses on sustainment. So food, lodging, fitness. When you think of being on a military base, all of the things that need to be there to support the military members, that was my job then. And I realized after I transitioned out of the military that I really loved the project management side of it. That's when I decided to go back to school. I had a master's at the time, an MBA in human resources, and I decided to go back to George Washington University and get a master's degree in project management. And I learned so much through that program. I met some incredible people, and I knew that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my career, eventually starting my own company and really finding ways to help leaders improve in that area.
I love your story, but I have to ask, when you joined the military, was there any inkling along the way where you finally figured out that you were going to be a leadership top performer? You know, what did you know, or were you just going, I can do this, I can do this. Oh, that hurt. I can do this, because the military is difficult.
You know, and I will tell you, I joined at a difficult time for our country as well. I was sitting in a college class, and it was 9/11, and I was watching the towers get hit. And that's when I made my decision that I was going to join the Air Force. And so I started talking to a recruiter right there in Kansas City, and I shipped out in 2002. And so there were a lot of unknowns at that time. And when we think about decision-making, I gathered a lot of data. I talked to a lot of people that had been in the military, and I didn't know much about what it was going to look like or feel like. And yes, there were some emotions in that decision. So I think that's a good example of trying to kind of separate out your emotions and the data. To directly answer your question, though, absolutely not. I had no idea where I would end up. I just knew that I wanted to do something different. And I learned a lot along the way. And I'll tell you, sometimes you learn more from leaders that you don't want to become than you do from leaders that you really respect. And I encountered a lot of both along the way. And so I always like to tell, you know, my friends, my family, my clients, that every experience should be a learning experience. And if you're in a bad situation, take note, because how can you, you know, not become that person if it's a leader that's kind of making it difficult for you?
And that makes perfect sense to me. You know, you sound very much like me. I'm observing all of the time. I may not be saying much because I'm an introvert and I really am not around people all that much. That doesn't matter. I'm watching and I'm listening. And if your words are not congruent with what you're doing, you're no leader.
I couldn't agree more. And it's funny because I also consider myself much more introverted than extroverted. And I'm client facing, you know, all day long. And so a lot of people are shocked by that. A lot of people think that I'm extroverted because, you know, I'm in meetings and I'm talking and I'm doing my job and I love my job. I love my work. But if you talk to my husband, he will reinforce how introverted I am. When I'm at home, I like hanging out with him and my three dogs and relaxing. And my weekends, I keep pretty clear.
You and me both. And people will say, Denise, you don't sound like an introvert. Well, I'm not shy. And truthfully, I don't have much in the way of filters, but I need to be alone a lot. And honestly, three people is just too people-y for me. I can do that for about 59 3/4 minutes. Then I have to go. I really do need to be alone and quiet. You know, I'll see this on Facebook all the time. What music do you listen to when you're working? None. I need quiet because my brain doesn't need to be, I'm an introvert, but I also have a computer science degree. I'm thinking in code. I'm thinking in images and in pictures. I don't want to hear Squeeze My Lemon, although I love that album, Led Zeppelin, but still, I don't need to be distracted. So we all, I think what I'm trying to say is once we determine how we show up best, do that.
I completely agree with that. You're hitting the nail on the head for me. I also need to avoid music when I'm working. I have to be all in on something. And I love listening to music when I'm focused on listening to music. I have to be focused on my work. And as much as I love to say, hey, I'm all in focused, I'm kind of forced to context switch throughout the day.
Oh, we all are. Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked about that a bit in the green room. So let's go down that rabbit hole.
It's hard. And I think that the pandemic has definitely played into this, where a lot of people and a lot of organizations have taken the road of, hey, we can do so much more, you know, with meetings and with Zoom. And so I find myself now with more meetings than I've ever had, because I see a 20-minute hole on my calendar and someone ask, hey, can we meet for just a few minutes? And so I pop it on there. And at the end of the day, if we're doing that, the context switching and the level of exhaustion that comes with that can be very intense. I'm such
and the lack of focus, you lose focus.
Yes. And then when do you do the work? Because every single one of those meetings generally has work associated with it. You don't just attend a meeting and leave and that was that, in most cases, at least the way that I work. And so I was talking to an executive yesterday and I asked her the same question. She said that there's more meetings than ever and we agreed on that. And I asked her, when do you do your work? And she said, oh, my head's down time is 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. every day. And so she is going to meetings all day from early morning until 5 p.m. And then she has 3 hours of heads down time. And
I hadn't heard it like that, but I'm finding, because I'm a web developer by trade and I'm in meetings a lot, I'm in consultations a lot. And I'm finding that after I take, I would call it a dinner break, because I really only eat one meal a day around 2 p.m. unless I forget and then get a headache and have to go eat. And it's not that I don't love to eat. I love to cook, but our days are so overwrought. It's the best thing I can come up with. And I have found that between 7 and 11, there you go, 7-11, is when nobody's talking to me. I'm not in a meeting. My phone isn't ringing. That's my head's down time. And it's getting tiresome because I'd like to relax.
I think that's it. I think that it is not sustainable. And we can do it for a while. I used to have a boss and they called it the hero mentality, you know, where, hey, I can do this and I can power through. And you can do that for a little bit, but it's not sustainable. And I think that we have to recognize that. It's sad, but I get excited for the weekends, because when I said my weekends are my own, there's not much on the calendar, that's when my head's down time is. And I'll usually try to squeeze in 4 hours of work on a Saturday, 4 hours of work on a Sunday. And I will tell you, I get more work done in those 4 hours than sometimes 3 days of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, just because I don't have interruptions or meetings.
Exactly. I do the same thing. Being a workaholic, a highly, highly, what did I say? I'm an introvert, so I can do whatever I want to do. I live alone. I can do whatever I want to do. I can make a gumbo at 3 in the morning. I have done that. So, it's kind of like, ooh, I can get by with a lot of stuff. But Saturdays and Sundays, I don't know when to stop. So I'll get up really early in the morning and I'll, pack in a couple of hours, make notes for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then I've had to train myself to walk out of this room and shut the door. Because if I come back over to this part of the house, I have to look at that door and say, am I going in there? It's not just, hey, I'm walking through. I have to stop and think about it, or I make myself stop and think about it. It's all I can do to make myself stop working all the time.
I can relate to that very much. And the hard part, and it sounds like you're possibly in the same boat,
Oh, yeah.
when you love your work, you want to just keep doing it. And I love my work.
Exactly, same thing. And I'm always thinking of something that I can do to improve something I've already done. It's like, ooh, 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 and off I go. I've got a squirrel brain, but I love it. But I'm tired.
I think that the self-awareness is key. When you start to realize that you're tired or fatigued or feeling that burnout, I think we need to just raise our hand and say, I need to shake it up. I need to switch up my schedule. And I have to admit, my husband, he's so gracious. We don't have any small kids. We have three rescue dogs. When you talk about making an emotional decision, my biggest emotional decisions are always at the animal shelter. And I've done it three times. But three, I think, is enough for now. But we have found great ways to where, okay, I'm going to work for these 4 hours and we still find time together. So like I said, he's very gracious and understanding. And I don't think that I'm diving into my work at the expense of my relationships or anything along those lines. And so we all have to figure out what works well for us because I know some parents that they're not going to be able to work 4 hours each day, even if they wanted to on a weekend. And that's okay. We have to figure out what works for us and make sure that we're not getting to that point of just pure exhaustion or burnout to where we go from working so many hours a week to just disconnected. Like I can't do one more second of it. For me, I've worked like that for many, many years. The consulting industry is pretty fast and hard at times, especially if you're doing an IT implementation or something along those lines. You expect to roll your sleeves up and work hard for a while, but we need to know our own limits.
And you have to be intentional. And I think that's something that we can easily forget because there's, look, we're slammed all day long. Here's email, here's phones. Look, I'll be honest with you, I do not give my cell phone number to anybody. I just won't. That's my ones. You can't reach me unless you're on my list of contacts and there's maybe 10 people who actually have my phone number. You're not going to reach me that way. That's where I'm private. And it's deliberate. And people say, oh, well, I really need to call you. No, you don't. You've got my landline. You've got my email address. I have a toll-free number. You're not getting my cell phone number. And I'm deadly serious about it.
That is very interesting. And I laugh out loud because I asked someone the other day, or I was showing them something on my phone, and they looked at my main screen of my phone and they almost fell over. And they said, how do you live like this? And I asked them what they were talking about.
Your
And I'm,
calendar, I bet.
oh, no, not my calendar. I'm looking at my cell phone right now and my text notifications. I have 131.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
My email's 2303. And my phone notifications for either calls or voicemails, 66. And they just said,
No.
how do you live like that? You don't get that down to zero. And I said, if I got that down to zero, I'd have to stay up 24 hours a day. I mean, the amount of text and phone calls and emails and things that feed to my cell phone, and I mean it. Sometimes I'm embarrassed and I have to tell someone, I'm so sorry, your text message got lost in my phone because I was in meetings for 10 hours today and then working after that. but it's the truth. And so not giving your cell phone number out might be the most brilliant thing that I've heard.
It works for me. It really does. And, you know, the other day I was trying to sign up, for, you know, as a test for a platform that I would like to look at. It's an AI platform. They wanted my cell phone number. I said, I'm out. And I wouldn't give it to them. And I just chose to go somewhere else.
I have done that as well. If they want email, that's okay. But if they insist, if it's a mandatory field for a phone number, I completely agree with you. I don't move forward.
No, they're not going to get it. So let's talk. Well, we're having fun. Let's talk about the book and really quickly, because I know we have other things we wanted to cover. But what prompted you and Damon Limby to write this book? And the name of the book, y'all, is Good Decisions Equal Success. Stop Decision Anxiety and Start Taking Action. And that word action is so important.
Absolutely. Damon and I have worked together for many years. Our companies partner on work. We have such a great working relationship. And we found ourselves really bouncing ideas off of each other and using each other as sounding boards when we had big decisions to make about business. And so we really were having weekly meetings and coming up with agendas on, hey, let's talk about this, or hey, what would you do in this situation? And we found that so powerful. And a lot of the approaches that we were taking are in our book. And I just found that so beneficial that at one point we said, we should write a book. We should put all of this in writing and share it because it works so well for us. And I have to tell you, I find nothing more exhilarating than collaborating with other small business owners. I mean, you have to have grit to run your own small business. And I love, love, love idea sharing, brainstorming, you know, using people as sounding boards and vice versa. And so that's really where it started, just from us putting what we actually were doing into words.
And I love that because so many people, and you referenced it a bit ago, so many people just say, oh, I can do this. I got this. I don't need help. Oh, yeah, you do. Look, I was my own bottleneck for the longest kind of time because I had that attitude. I'm smart. I'm educated. I can do this. No, I couldn't. I was my own bottleneck. And until I started asking questions and asking for help and offering assistance to other people and I hate this term, picking their brain, but listening to them and asking, you know, important questions. Here's the thing about entrepreneurial-minded people. We want to help you. We're not holding those little nuggets of wisdom close to our chest and saying, I'm not going to tell you anything. You can't know this. We want to help you.
I think that small businesses, when you're collaborating with other leaders, that, you know, the more the merrier. I don't ever think, oh, if I share this approach or, you know, this hack that works for me with another business, maybe they're going to gain a competitive edge. I don't ever think that. I will openly share anything and everything and think that it's important. You know, I have a strong veteran business owner community. And I love it so much. I'm part of a group. It's called CEO Circle. And the amount of wisdom that I have gained from collaborating with that group, it's off the chart. I have never been more appreciative for a group. And we just openly idea share.
And you're right. I mean, that's the way it should be. If we're not sharing our wisdom or our boo-boos, which is normally I think what we're sharing is like, this hurt. Does anybody have any ideas how I can fix it, or should I fix it, or should I just move on? You have to know who you can talk with. And, you know, if they get a competitive advantage, oh, wow. This is what I think about. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, you don't want to give away all this information. Your other podcasts are going to, you know, podcast hosts are going to take those ideas. God bless them. Take them.
You just said something that really jumps out at me, because I think there's two key things when you're working in a group such as CEO Circle or other. I think one, you have to be willing to be very vulnerable. You have to say, you know what? I'm not going to paint my business as everything's perfect, T's are crossed, I's are dotted. If there's an area that you're weak at, or you're not sure what to do, or if you've made a mistake, you absolutely have to be vulnerable, or people don't know how to help you, and vice versa. I think that's one. I think the second one is finding some way to hold ourselves and possibly others accountable. We have to say, hey, here's what you said you were going to do. Did you actually do it? Because if we're just talking, it's not as powerful as saying, you know what, out of this conversation, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and then someone checking in with you. I think those accountability calls and follow-ups are really critical.
Oh, I had one last night that had me going, I'm sorry, because I was just talking and I did not take notes and I didn't remember the conversation. And when she brought it up, I went, oh, geez. I mean, my head was, I didn't beat my head on the desk, but I came close. My fault. I dropped it. So I did a lot of apologizing, and she was very gracious. She said, Denise, don't worry about it. I know there's, and she was trying to make excuses for me. I know there's a lot going on. I said, no, stop. I blew it. Let me apologize and I will fix it. And it wasn't anything major. It really wasn't. I didn't break a website. I didn't drop something on social media that should have been posted. I just didn't do what I said I was going to do. And I was mortified. And that leads me back to something that you just said about weaknesses. We don't always know where our weaknesses are. So we need people to point them out and go, hey, what's going on?
Absolutely. I work a lot with personality styles. My kind of model of choice, I love the Wiley DISC suite. So DISC workplace or DISC management. And the key thing is self-awareness. So if someone takes a personality assessment and we're going through a workshop or one-on-one where we're reviewing results, I think the main thing that comes out of that is someone sitting down and taking the time to reflect and say, you know what? This statement really feels like me. I'll have them underline some of their top statements that they agree with and put an X next to some of the statements that they don't agree with. And then I ask them to socialize that with people in their circle and ask them how they're perceived. Because where we think we may be weak or strong, if we have an honest group of people, our network, our trusted allies that give it to us straight, and I say, you know what? I don't think this is like me. And they laugh and they say, yes, it is. That's something for me to continue to reflect on. And self-awareness is so important.
It is. And, you know, in my journey, my podcast is now 16 years old. She can drive now. But the thing is, I'm telling you, it's crazy. I look back, you know, she turned 16 the beginning of the year. I went, what? How did that happen? Because I do get to meet people like you from all over the world. And I'm not paying attention to the passing of time. But recently, you know, and I'm going to paint a picture in my head, but you know, when all of a sudden you're hearing something or seeing something, it's the same thing over and over and over again. It's like this arrow is pointing down over your head going, would you just shut up and pay attention? And I've been having a lot of that going on recently about my podcast, and it's all good, but I'm shocked by it because, to be honest with you, my perception of my website is not your perception of it, or my, you know, or my podcast or whatever it is that I'm doing. And people are getting pretty open about what they think about this podcast. So far, it's all good, but nothing I would have ever said about my own self, ever.
I want to just congratulate you because I think what you have built is phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
It really is. And I don't just say that, you know, off the cuff. I think what you have done and what you have built is absolutely fantastic. And I know that you just said you would have never envisioned this. You know, tell me, what were you thinking when you decided many years ago, I'm just going to start a podcast? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
It's easy and kind of embarrassing. I actually got on a podcast as a guest 16 years ago by accident. I thought we were doing a written interview because, you know, back in the day, we didn't have WordPress. We didn't have GUI, really, graphical user interface. I'm a nerd in stilettos. And we communicated largely by written documents. And this gal, she's still a friend of mine. She had one of the very first podcasts. It's still out there. And she said, Denise, I would love to interview about you about what you're doing. I said, great. So she said, okay, call this number. And I did. We talked for about an hour. And about 2 days later, I get a link. It said, here you go. And I said, what is here you go? I opened that link and I heard my own voice and I hit my head on the floor, literally, because I'll tell you, you're going to laugh at me, but I hate to hear my own voice. To me, I sound like I'm going to sing happy birthday, Mr. President. I think I sound ridiculous, but that's it is what it is. But I called her. I said, what was that? She said, that's Blog Talk Radio. That was a podcast. I had never heard the term. And because as an introvert, there are no pictures of me on the internet. There have never been. There never will be. There are very few pictures of me in existence. I hate it. Thank you, Granny. When I was a kid, I was totally traumatized. And you're just not allowed to take pictures of me. So I thought, well, I'm not going to show up in networking events and slap a, you know, tag on my left breast. It's not going to happen. So I said, I can do podcasting. And you know, to use your term, I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
I am so intrigued by the no picture. It makes me want to search the internet. And
people do. Yep, they do. They're like, oh, I found a picture of you. Nope, that's not me. That's Susan Harrow. Nope, that's not me. That's Candace Porter. You know, Porter. So, you know, people are always looking, but I think they've gotten used to the fact it's just not going to happen.
I can relate to so much of what you shared. I have a YouTube channel and I stumbled into that by accident during pandemic. I was sitting here. I'll start by saying I was traveling roughly 75% of my time.
Ow.
As we moved into pandemic. Yes. A lot of in-person meetings, training, and so forth. And then when our world came to a stop, when my books cleared, it was all in-person engagements. And so my husband and I put together, you know, some puzzles for a few weeks. And I said, well, maybe I can figure out a way to share some project management type of knowledge. And I started recording some YouTube videos and I was working to edit them for my first few. I'm someone that I always like to know how to do something, even if I know I'm not going to be doing it longer term. So when I started my company, same with QuickBooks, I wanted to learn how to do my books, make sure I understood how to read them, but I knew I wasn't going to do that long term. Same with editing videos. And Denise, I cannot tell you the level of anxiety of hearing my own voice and making comments. It's traumatizing. And so I don't do it anymore, but I still have the YouTube.
It's so funny because I will accidentally hear myself. And honestly, I think, and people go, oh gosh, she's got to have big boobs and she's blonde. I'm not. That's all you need to know. but I thoroughly enjoy getting to meet people like you and Damon and just people from all over the world. I'm looking around in my office and I've got three bookcases in here. I'm going to have to build a bigger house. I've got books in here, in my bedroom, in the living room, in the garage. I've got books everywhere. But the exception in here is that every single book was gifted to me by people like you. And I get to read those books. And I have certain, you know, certain shelves like, okay, this one I'm going to dive into a lot. So I can, you know, kind of figure out where I need to go. This book is on that one of those shelves. It's like, okay, I need to grab that one again. I read them. I review them. I genuinely appreciate these books that land here, because your heart and your soul, you know, that's where you put it in your books.
I agree with you. And writing this book, it was such a different experience than what I expected. I was so excited to move into publishing. And when it finally published and I got a copy of it in my hands, I was paralyzed by fear. I was like, what have I done? People are going to read this. And I asked someone that I knew, you know, had written a book as well. I asked someone, how did you feel about your book when it first came out? And they said, I could not read it for the first 6 months. I was frozen. And I realized that a lot of people, a lot of authors go through that the more that I'm talking to people. And so it's very interesting. And I'm of course able to open it and read it. And I am proud of it. I think it has a lot of fantastic information in there. There's still a few things that I'll read, and I wish I could change the sentence or edit it or whatnot. But when you talk about being vulnerable, when you write a book and put your heart and soul out there, it's easy to, I guess, get into that imposter syndrome where it's what qualifies me to write a book? But this is the stuff that I work day in and day out with leaders, and they're open about struggling with a lot of this when it comes to decision making.
Well, and that's just the thing. And the thing with the book is there's no take back. You can republish it, but once it's on somebody's bookcase and they've read it, they've read it. Yeah. And they're either going to love it or keep it. What I do with books, I have to take some pictures of these books. I hate to mark up a book. That goes back to my early days as a, you know, my mom taking us all to the library, letting us take as many books as we wanted because we're all voracious readers. And then we would go home. It was too hot to be outside. We would sit in the living room and we would read a book, pass it down, read a book, pass it down. We're all readers, literally. And I keep thinking, I can write a book. I can write a book. No, I can't. I can write a book. I'm so stuck. I've got a book, but right now it's an epic blank page. I need help.
It took 2 years for us to write this book.
See, now I don't feel so bad.
And it was much harder than I thought it was going to be. And so I feel you. I had a lot of this content in my head for years. When you start getting it out of
you
your head.
I know you know it. Yes. And then you sit down and start typing. It's like, you know, I think I'll go fry some chicken. I'm busy. Go.
You said you love to eat. Fried chicken sounds good.
I do love to cook. But you know what I'm finding? And did it help? I find that I speak better because it's coming from the heart. If I'm trying to type it, I'm using big words. And I'm, you know, writing the way I was taught to write when I was a kid. That's not how I speak. So writing and speaking are two very different things for me.
Yes, I agree with that. And I would consider myself pretty casual in how I speak. And then even writing a hard email, I mean, it can take me a long time. Is that the right word? And more formal. I guess I write more formal, but I speak more casual.
Same thing. And I'll have to say, okay, I do a lot of social media for my sister who's in politics in California. And I use my original education and I'll get a note back, say, dumb it down, please. Really? It's California. Really? And she'll say, they're not going to read it. They're not going to understand it. Which I, you know, so I dumb it down and I go, Homer Simpson, stupid. And she likes that. So that worries me. It really does worry me a bit.
You know what, though? That is something that I bring to the workplace. We have to keep it simple for people to understand something new and to really specifically be able to call out what needs to be done better or different. Keeping it simple is the way to go. And I think that we have to consider that even when we're talking strategic planning, we're writing a 3 or 5 year plan. Anyone that picks that up needs to understand what we're talking about and break the goals down into objectives and then actions. We need to use plain language. And sometimes you have consultants come in, and I'm not saying bad things about consultants because I am one, but this beautiful, very complex plan is written and everyone cheers, and then it goes on the shelf and it's never executed because it's complex and they don't know how to execute it.
And they look at it and go, oh God, this is going to take the whole weekend. I don't have time for this. We do have a focus problem. There's no question. And I think it's getting much, much worse. But if you can grab somebody, and I hate this term, sound bites, but you almost have to, because you have to grab their attention and have them go, oh, okay, keep going. Now I'll listen to you. But you have to have it very focused and very intentional. And it can't be big words. I'm just telling you, it can't be a bunch of big words. Because as much as I love big words, I was reading Guy de Maupassant when I was a kid. It's still going to be a focus problem for me because I'm like, oh, I don't have time for this. I've got to go feed the cat. Oh, I've got, yeah, and you're always finding reasons to not do it.
If it feels taxing, especially.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, we've already talked about how little maybe brain power we have after all of the hours in front of the computer. If you then go to sit down and read something and it's big words and it's complex and it's taxing, going to get set aside pretty quickly, at least for me.
It is. And unless, I mean, I've in weekends for me, you're talking about weekends. These books land on my doorstep all week long and I make a stack of them. And come weekend, you know, after I've done my household chores and whatever I really needed to do, I've got those physical books sitting on the table next to my couch. And I will just splay all over that couch, cat here, blanket there, and I'm reading books. And I think I started to mention this, I don't mark them up. I hate that. But I have sticky notes, I have index cards, they get fat. Yours is fat. It's got stuff all over. I've got yellow sticky notes, I've got pink sticky notes because they mean different things to me. It's like, go back here, go do this. That's just how I operate. But when these books land here, I pick them up and physically read them.
Why don't you randomly open to one of those sticky notes? I'd love to hear one of your notes from the book. Did I lose your audio, Denise?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we did lose you there for a bit. I was reading from page 61. I can start over. So it says, know yourself. Everyone has natural strengths and weaknesses. There is power in knowing what you are. When you know what your value is, you can make skilled contributions to your team. It's a pink sticky note because pink has a certain connotation for me, you know, questions that I want to ask. And it has a big question mark on it and says, how do I know who I am? And then the next mark there, I put an underline underneath that and I said, well, start asking people who you are, because we don't see ourselves the way, and we talked about this earlier, we don't see ourselves the way other people see us. And I have to tell you, I was very guilty of this for the longest kind of time, because people would say, you know, after the podcast, I always call you, tell you thank you, and they say lovely things. Oh, thank you. And I would not really listen to it. I just didn't listen to it all that well. I didn't take it to heart. I didn't write it down. I was like, oh, hey, great. Thank you so much. And then I would go back to writing code or whatever I was doing. I was very disrespectful. And I didn't even know it.
Do you think they perceived you as disrespectful in those situations, or are you being hard on yourself?
I'm being hard on myself. I don't think they beat me up as badly as I beat myself up, but it did delay me really realizing how important this podcast is to me and to other people. I didn't know. To me, this is something I do because I love it, but I don't make a living out of it. I make a living out of, you know, building websites and consultations. So I was like, oh, hey, great. Thank you. And off I'd go. It was disrespectful.
Well, I think the self-reflection is important, and it sounds like you have changed some of your behaviors based on that.
Oh, I had to. And, you know, like I say, because once I recognized it, I went, well, Denise, how rude are you? And I wasn't deliberately being rude. I was just, you know, I had something I needed to go do. And I wasn't taking it very seriously. It's like, oh, thank you. That is so nice of you. And it was, but I wasn't listening between the lines, so to speak, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will tell you something that I've received recently that blew me away. It just stopped me in my tracks. I have an executive that I've worked with for 5 years now, and he is one of the best leaders that I've ever worked with, for, seen. I mean, if I want to be someone when I grow up, he's such a great leader. And he knows that I love crystals, you know, like gems. I love crystals. And I got a lovely crystal angel from him for Christmas, which was very meaningful. And then I opened the card that he gave me, and inside the card was a full page, like an 8.5 by 11 typed note about how much he appreciates working together. And it was the most thoughtful, meaningful letter. It just warmed my heart. And I hear you, Denise. There's certain things that when people say, thank you, or I really appreciate this, that sometimes it's easy to say, yeah, and on to the next. But wow, that moment was really powerful for me. And I don't think that he even realizes how much it warmed my heart and stopped me in my tracks, but it truly did.
And I've had, and I'm so glad we're talking about this, like recently in particular, I've had these just pop up like crazy. And like, where are these coming from? One of my podcast guests is Nathan Schulhoff. Now, I doubt that you know that name, but he is the father of the MP3 player. We listen to music the way we do because of Nathan. And he said something. He wanted to introduce me to a friend of his who is an inventor. And I said, I would love to. And he said, I think with your unique way of delving into podcasting, you would be a perfect fit for him. And I had seen that word and heard that word unique multiple times recently. And I'm like, what are they talking about? So I sent him a note and I said, Nathan, if you would, just tell me what you mean by unique. You know, what are you talking about? He sent me the most lovely response. And basically what he was saying was that, you know, being who he is and the work he's done, he has been on many, many TV shows. I mean, he's just been all over the place and big names, big, big, big names. And he said he likes mine better than any of them. Really? But it's a conversation, and that's always my sticking point. It has to be a conversation. It's about you. It's about the guest. But all of a sudden, I'm getting things that are just, my jaw's dropping. I'm like, okay, I am not seeing me the way they see me. Now what do I do?
Reflect. And I think you're approaching it in the perfect way, asking questions, because you're right. Our perceptions of ourself can differ a lot from what other people see. And that could be, and I'm not saying this in your case, but it could be that imposter syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
Head, you know, where, oh, wait a second, how can that be true? You know, or what qualifies me to do this? That could be one way that it puts our minds on a different track, but really asking other people for input is key. And I always tell people, and I talk about it a little bit in the book, when we talk about being aggressive versus assertive. And
let's talk about that, because that has a sticky note on it too.
It is really key. And when we talk about personality types, I'm going to use kind of the dominant type as an example. They're often, I'm going to tell it how it is. Here you go. And they're focused on results. So they want to move really quickly. okay, I want to get this done, see the results, and let's move on to the next thing. And sometimes they come across as really blunt or maybe even offensive. And when I talk to, you know, I'll say my D's when I'm working with dominant style, a lot of them are self-aware and they say, well, that's not my intent. That's not my intent. Well, I remind them that the person that gets to decide if they're aggressive or not is the person on the receiving end. If they perceive them as being aggressive, then our D styles need to find a way to adjust so that they're not coming across as aggressive. So that's the whole know your audience, know who's on the other end. Because sometimes if it's two D's working together, oh, they can be so direct and off they go. But we need to know who our audience is and adjust our style accordingly.
Exactly. And when you're talking about making decisions, and I have another sticky note. I have to read this. Part two of this book, there's four or five. Let's see. One, two, three, four. There are eight steps in this book, and I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm going to tell the audience, go get this book. But the first one is step one, define decision and successful outcomes. And then you go down to step eight, measure your progress. So there's so many things going on. You can't just make a decision, or you shouldn't just make a decision, go, oh, that's going to work, and then have it smack you right in the head.
You have to be intentful. I think that is absolutely key. What problem are we trying to solve, or what opportunity are we trying to pursue with this decision? And if we can't be crystal clear in answering that, then how are we going to go through the following decision-making process steps and help others understand? So I always recommend when there's a high impact decision. So I want to be clear on that. If we're trying to figure out what we're going to have for breakfast, we don't need to go through our decision-making steps. No. But hey, some of them might be able to help. But the intent here is key, because it's going to get messy at some point in that decision-making process, whether when we're trying to gain buy-in or maybe we're trying to implement. And we all need to be aligned. And I say we as in the people, the team that are either part of the process or being impacted by it. And we need to really clearly say, here is the intent of this, to solve this problem or to improve in this area, and then follow with the rest of the details. If we can't answer the why right up front and have everyone aligned with us, it's going to be impossible to follow the other steps successfully.
It is. And one of the things that you say in your book is decision making is a critical skill. No kidding. Critical, you know, thinking too. Where did that go? What happened?
Absolutely. The critical thinking is so important. Critical thinking. Yes. This is one of the areas that I've been reflecting on lately, because ChatGPT, we've got AI now, right?
Mm-hmm. And we can't avoid it, so don't even try.
We can't
deal with it.
We need to understand how it actually can make our lives easier and use it in that way. What we should not do is say, I don't need to think anymore because I'm going to prompt ChatGPT to spit me out a paragraph that I'm going to copy and paste. It doesn't work like that. And that's what I really want to challenge people to think about. You still need critical thinking. AI is not going to replace humans. And I do worry that people are going to try to take the easy road, and the quality of work, the deliverables, the outcomes are going to be far off if we allow that to happen.
Well, and we stop thinking. It's not just critical thinking. We just go, oh, your brain does get lazy. It's easy to happen. I mean, I had an entire week last week where my brain just said, nah, I'm not working today or tomorrow. And you know what? Probably not Friday either. I finally just gave in and basically did what I needed to do, had to do. And I needed the time down, apparently. But if we get so lazy that our brain muscles atrophy. Oh boy.
We really do have to be specific and, again, intentful about challenging ourselves.
We do. How do you challenge your, I mean, you've got a lot going on. You've got a lot going on. And how do you, when you kind of catch yourself going, I'm going to slough off, do you give yourself permission if you really need to? Or do you say, this is a challenge, let's make this work?
I will take the time when I feel like I need to take a break or have some time for me. I'll make the time. One of my favorite things to do right now is cryotherapy. I don't know if you've tried that, Denise.
I have not. Tell me.
It is full body cryotherapy. And so basically you go into a freezer for 3.5 minutes and it is supposedly the same health benefits of kind of soaking in the ice water. And it's somewhere between, depending on where you go, minus 120 degrees to sometimes up to minus 200 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ow.
And the clarity that I get from doing that and just the shock to my body and my brain, it is exhilarating. I have been doing it now for, I guess, maybe 9 months or so. There's a couple of places to go here in Reno, and it's fascinating. I really enjoy it.
I do something similar. Not really. When my brain is just exhausted, I will deliberately stand up, go to my refrigerator, stick my entire body if I can. It's a big refrigerator. I stick my upper half in there as much as I can. And I have a mini meditation. Because you know, when you open the refrigerator door, you don't know how you got there, what you're doing, what you want. It's always a bottle of water. And then I relax. But it's not like cryotherapy, but it's all I've got right now. I'm going to go look into that and see if we have it here, because I love the idea of it's, you know, I'm guessing here, Candace, but you're also relieving inflammation, which is a big problem for all of us. The food we eat, the stuff that we do to our bodies, inflammation is a big problem. But if you're shocking your brain like that, I'm going to guess, and I'm going to have to go look at some research on it, but that probably does help.
That's one of the number one health benefits is.
Really? I was guessing. It was
look
a
at you.
It was a wag. It was a wild ass guess.
You nailed it. That's one of the big things. And people that have chronic pain, some people swear by it. And I have to tell you that when I go, I notice a significant decrease in inflammation and my body just flushes out fluids. And I'm telling you, if you like to stick the upper half of your body in the refrigerator, you will love cryotherapy.
Picture that in your head. Hello, refrigerator, how are you? And then I just go blank.
It's hilarious too, because it's been in the 20s in Reno, you know, and I'll go outside and I'll act like I'm freezing to death. I need all my coat and my boots and my gloves. Yet then I drive a few miles and I pay to go minus 120 to 80, you know, degrees. So it's nonsensical, yet it works. And I feel fantastic afterwards.
I am definitely going to look for that in my area. Listen, we've only got a few more minutes, and I want you to come back, because as much as I wanted to delve into the book, we decided early on in the green room that we weren't going to do that right away. But there are so many things in this book that I really want to talk about at another time. So we're talking specifically about the book and, you know, the tips and tricks and just the different information that you're sharing. Can you come back?
I would love to. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, you know, I did it on the radio, so you can't tell me no. It's very great.
No, I think I'm too busy, Denise. No, I would absolutely love the opportunity. Thank you.
Good. It's a terrific book. And I want people to know that, because you're talking about, oh God, you're talking about everything that we need to know about making good decisions. And these days, if we're not consciously making good decisions, things can go very badly, very quickly, and we don't even know what we did wrong. So I do want you to come in, talk about all of those things.
Thank you for that. And I think it's a great book as well. I am proud of it. And if you have those moments where you look up in your career, in your life, and you ask yourself, what happened? I'm a little bit off course or whatnot. I think that just going back to some of the basics on the decision making and reminding ourselves that we get to control our careers, we get to control our life path. And when we're talking high impact decisions, that is what the book focuses on. We can change it. We can always change the path that we're on. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
And it requires awareness. Before I let you go, can you share a personal experience or an anecdote where effective decision making played a significant role in achieving your success?
Absolutely. Starting my own business would be really the number one thing. Can't believe that it's going to be 8 years, but I did my due diligence. I gathered the data. I was scared. I'm not going to lie. I had emotions. I was scared when I was going to quit my job that was going very well for me and just launch and do it. And I'll tell you what, I haven't looked back a day since doing so. And when I talk about loving my work, I mean it. And so
Shows. I hear
that's a big
your
one.
voice. Pretty amazing what you've accomplished in just 8 years. So, congratulations to you. And I have to ask you, reflecting on what we've been talking about today, what would you say is the most critical takeaway or a piece of advice that you would offer to our listeners until they can hear you again?
I would say, self-reflect and really use a structure if we're talking about decision making. Know who the actual decision maker is, because that gets muddy oftentimes. Who's the decision maker versus who's driving the decision? Be really clear on the roles there, and then use a process. And I am confident that better outcomes are achieved by doing so.
That's what we want to talk about next week. Candace, I genuinely, sincerely appreciate your company today, and spending time with you has been a real pleasure. Before I let you go, and I know I've said that a couple of times, would you mind sharing your online presence and your preferred means of contact for those people who wish to learn more about you, and where can they find your book?
Absolutely. Thank you, Denise. My website's a great spot to learn more about me and my company. It's effectiveflowconnections.com. Also, again, makes me a little anxious, but my YouTube channel's fantastic. It's got a lot of information out there on decision making, on project management, change management, and you can find that by searching my name. Kandis Porter will pull up my channel. And then to reach out, LinkedIn is a fantastic place to kind of connect with me and ask any questions.
Thank you, Candace. I really look forward to having you come back. So, to our audience, as we conclude today's episode, your feedback means a lot to me. So, if you found the show helpful, please support us with a quick review on iTunes. Your input really is vital, vital, vital. I might be getting hungry in my mission to inspire and empower more individuals. So, don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a review, and share your Partner in Success Radio with friends and colleagues. And be sure to go find Candace Porter on the web and connect with her, and she will be back. Candace, thank you so much.
Thank you, Denise. It's been such a pleasure.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.